Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
Play something. Get what you need.
Welcome to the Cast of Us, a podcast dedicated to the show.
Dead Heads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
And this is the Cast of Us episode 610.
And this episode, we're covering The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon, season 2, episode 6, Au Revoir les Enfants, the season finale.
Yes, where we learned the theme of the Daryl Dixon show, which is you can't always get what you want.
You can't always get what you want.
If you try sometimes. So we're going to have a little spoilery segment at the end of this episode with some information about Daryl season 3. Not a lot, just something about the setting of next season. So if you don't want to hear any spoilers, then don't listen to that. But if you want to hear a little spoiler, listen to it.
It's called The Book of Falou. I wish. I would watch The Book of Falou.
Yeah, next season we're staying in France with Falou.
It's just a lovely romantic French movie with Falou and his new woman. It's very touching.
It's called The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon Hooking Up.
Yep.
All right, so it's Daryl Dixon season 2, episode 6, Au Revoir les Enfants. What do you think about this one in general?
Hated it the first time, liked it more the second time.
Hated it, huh? I
didn't hate it. I mean, hate
didn't
it
like
strong
it much. Yeah,
yeah. I just felt a bit like
Yeah, I kind of feel that way too. Like, there's some cool elements, but it felt, the show just feels so rushed. And, you know, when you hear the showrunner talk about it, he's like, well, we only have 6 episodes, so we have to kind of get, you know, put a lot in. And you can really feel that, to the point where it feels like it's contrived, or they're going through the motions, you know, like if some of these storylines had time to breathe, then it could be really effective. But it's just like, okay, let's bring a girl in that Falou likes, and then they're together, and now that's why he's not here, and they had this big romance within a 5-minute period of this episode, you know.
The most egregious thing, the thing that I'm just like, I'm sorry, you've done what, is what they did to Cadron in this episode. He had all this growth, we were all like rooting for him, and then he just kind of develops tunnel madness and runs away. Just like,
that's a thing with him. He runs off. He's the one character, him and Falou. Everyone else, it's like, okay, their storyline's over. Kill him off. Jacinta, Losang, Isabel,
Anna.
Yeah, Anna. Mm-hmm. But Cadron gets to run away and come back another day.
Peter's theory, he seems to be the bloody mystic of The Walking Dead. He's predicting he's like, we'll see Cadron in the first episode of the next season, but it'll be like as a zombie or dead to establish the next threat. And I'm like, yeah, fucking probably. I don't know. Like, whatever. Yeah.
did he predict that Ash would take Laurent?
He did, yep.
He did. Because so did one of the listeners, Billy Thompson, said word for word, I predict that Ash will take Laurent while Carol and Daryl have to stay back to make sure they can escape or something like that.
Yep. So. I mean, it's... Yeah. I mean, I was sad to see Laurent go. I know no one will believe me saying that, but I just felt a bit like...
No, you've been pretty sympathetic towards him lately.
Yeah. I was just like, well, at least you and Judith can bond over terrible parental figures never coming back. Like, just like, okay.
Hopefully it's not... Did you ever watch MASH?
No.
It was a huge show. In fact, I think the season finale might be the most watched narrative TV episode of anything ever, at least in the United States. But there was this character on there, Henry something, and he was like the guy in charge of the MASH unit. It was a Korean War medical unit. That's what the series was about. And he was great. And then I think the actor wanted to negotiate a salary or something, and he got kicked off the show. And then the next episode, they said that he, you know, got called, he got to go home, but it was just reported that his helicopter was shot down. Spoilers for MASH. And it was like, what a bummer. I mean, it's a war show, so, but God, that's...
I know, but what way to go? Yeah. Like, I was on a... It was like a BuzzFeed article or something about like 5 actors who left the show acrimoniously and how they were written off. And I was like, yep, it happens and it sucks. I can't remember what the examples were. There weren't any Walking Dead ones. But yeah, it's...
Yeah, they get treated badly. Well, like the chef character on South Park who was a Scientologist. Oh, yeah, Isaac Hayes. And they just pummeled that character.
But really did.
So hopefully that won't happen to Laurent is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think he and Ash are just flying off to a happy ending. Like, I can see a situation, like I was thinking about it, and I was like, maybe Daryl and Carol get back to the Commonwealth, and then Laurent's not there. They never arrived. He has to go and find him. But I'm also like,
no, please. I hope we do get to see him again at the end, but I don't think we will.
I was. Two good things. I was surprised and happy that Falou and Ash both survived the season. That was nice.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, okay, they didn't die. Yeah, that's cool.
A good point. Yes. We thought Ash was a goner.
And yeah, he definitely.
Survived. And Laurent, too.
I mean, were you thinking about, spoiler warning for Yellow Jackets, were you thinking about Yellow Jackets when they were trying to get the plane to go?
No, I didn't. Well,
I was.
I mean,
I was like, you know what would happen if this show had balls?
Oh my God. No, please, that would not be good.
No, it wouldn't. But there was part of me that was like, God, do it. Do something dark.
No, we want Laurent to live.
We do. If he, it was one of those things where I was
you
like,
see a little parachute kid come out with his parachute. I never tried to pack a parachute.
Allons-y.
Well, let me do my first point, the plan for Laurent.
Go for it.
So Daryl gives Laurent this guitar he found, and I kind of liked that Laurent realized that that meant Daryl wasn't coming with him because he's intuitive. Mm. It's a good parting gift. I still think it's kind of odd for Laurent to leave France without Daryl, but it made it a little more sense because Laurent kept saying, "You're going to come, right? What do you think the chances are he's going to come?" So he's counting on Daryl meeting him in the Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. That's why. But I still felt bad for him because it reminded me of Judith. Like, he's just lost his mother figure, Isabel, his real mother, all the nuns that used to take care of him, everybody. Mm-hmm. And Père now Jean. Now he's going, he lost Daryl kind of, at least for a while. And he's going mm-hmm. off with this guy who he just met, who seems to like to cuss up a storm in front of kids. Like,
yeah. But like, then by like halfway through this episode, just like, I would do anything to save this boy. And I'm like, I mean, sure. Like, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's nice, I guess.
Cause I mean, Daryl sort of, he wasn't manipulating him because he was being honest.
He was influencing him. Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't lying, but he was playing up things that he knew, like, oh, I'm sorry you lost a kid. You know, Carol did too. I was there. Like, so you should have sympathy for her, basically. And then, you know, that you can save one kid still. And that, because Ash is the easiest person in The Walking Dead history to convince of something, because then he immediately just became Laurent's best friend. Let me show you how this plane works and everything. And this is the one reason why we need to do this, you know.
Again, so, like, major safeguarding red flags for Laurent. Like, I'm sure Ash is lovely, but like, you know, Carol's only known him for like 2 weeks. Like, anyway, whatever. He's in the, I'm sure it's lovely.
And it kind of bothered me. I don't care about profanity, but he's like, fuck yeah, fucking A, you know, like, dude, there's a kid right
motherfucker!
There.
I was like, this is why people don't leave their kids with me. Like,
goddamn cunts, fuck you.
Laurent's like, oh no.
Oh, who's this guy?
Oh, who's this guy? He used to sit in the back of the plane because Carol pulled shotgun and then flew out the plane. I'd be raging. I'd be like, what do you mean I have to sit in the fucking back seat all the way to Ohio?
I get carsick.
No.
So Daryl keeps promising Laurent he'll see him again. And I'm like, you can't promise that, but I guess Daryl can because he's the last man standing no matter what. But really, you shouldn't say that. And then I love that that Laurent played, you can't always get what you want. That was almost like a little passive aggressive sassy thing to play, you know? I could almost be like, you little shit.
This song's about you.
It's like, so funny.
I did love that, like, that made Daryl cry. I was like, all right.
Yeah. What if he'd start playing jiggy jiggy jig? I hate you. Fucking hate you.
Smells like Teen Spirit. He's like, Perjon was really into grunge. Probably never heard of it. Right. Okay.
Cult of personality. No. so then, Billy Thompson wrote, my prediction for the last episode, Ash and Laurent leave in the plane while Daryl and Carol help them from outside the plane. This means they can write another two characters out of the show, but in a positive way. I'm hoping if this does happen, we do eventually get a Daryl and Laurent reunion in the series finale. I think another listener may have predicted that too, so my apologies. I forgot who that was. So then Carol also makes it clear that the plan is to take Laurent to the Commonwealth. I guess we would have already known that, but she says to Daryl, you know, oh, he's going to get along really well at the Commonwealth. And then later, after Ash and Laurent ended up going without them, she tells Daryl, oh, they're probably there by now. So I guess she told Ash, look for this big settlement in Ohio and just tell them that Carol sent you. You know,
just fly in, it will be fine.
Chill. They have a landing strip right in the middle of town. But I guess this whole like Laurent as Messiah storyline is over, which means new stuff next season. I know there will be a lot of listeners who will actually be happy about that, but I do hope that when Daryl gets back to the Commonwealth, Laurent will have started a cult there.
Yes, I hope so too. In a little like white robe, like singing, I'd like to teach the world to sing or something like that. I'd be like, yeah.
And Judith is like his biggest acolyte.
I would love that. His acolyte, yeah. I'm like, oh man. I just feel like, I don't know. It all felt very rushed and just a bit.
Yeah.
Like by the time they were on the plane and had flown away, I was like, there's still quite a lot of episode left. Just like, what are we gonna do? Oh, okay. And then we went on a bioluminescence journey, which was
They stuck at everything. Like, it's a long, dark tunnel with hallucination-inducing bat guano and bioluminescent zombies. I kind of loved it, actually.
It's one of those things where I was like, it's sort of cool, but I feel like it's weird that they're spending so much time with this when we've got so little time with other things that would have benefited from more time.
Yes, or this long story with Falou talking about the time, I mean, basically bragging about the time he saved this racist neighbor's kid. You know, that took like 5 minutes. Come on.
I'm just such a good person.
Yeah, immediately caused, I guess her name is Alika, to want to bone him.
Oh, yeah. She's like, fuck it back.
So hot.
You were so hot to the racist neighbor's child. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I did not like your story, but, you know, whatever. Cool. They're in love. It's fine. I was a bit like, yeah. Oh, my God. That was funny. I was like, yeah, they're really coming down hard on some immigration politics in this last episode.
I know.
Like, I'm like, I mean, sure, relevant, but also like, wow,
they just like, kept hitting it really hard in this episode.
I was like, oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we got a couple of Scots and they kind of made fun of them and turned out to be wankers. I was like, what is Lucy going to think about this?
Did you feel, having like spent a couple weeks with me and Peter this summer, was it accurate? Is that
it was pretty much just like watching you guys.
I didn't mind it.
You
I
kept
thought it was
saying
quite
the English
funny.
Were shite. I mean, that part was true.
No, I was like, no, oh, of course
Lucy
we're doing
never
this.
Said
of
that.
Course.
Lucy never said that.
I'm like, no. Ugh. It was fine. I mean, I can't. Having them be called like Shona and Angus is the equivalent of going to like Spain and them being called like Juan and Juanita. It's like the most like stereotypical name. But like, fine. I'm not entirely sure what the point of them was. I was sort of like, oh, you're just red shirts, really, aren't you? Like, it's one of those things. I liked, I was going to talk a little about the whole tunnel thing because I was kind of fascinated by it. I love the idea of using the channel tunnel because in the zombie apocalypse, that becomes a really kind of interesting method of crossing over into another country. I think in The Stand there's a really cool scene way at the start set in one of the big tunnels coming out of New York. So I was thinking about that when I was watching this particular one. I thought it was bold that Carol, who's claustrophobic, would go into the tunnel at all.
Is she?
Yes. That's the whole thing.
Yes,
in
she is.
Squeeze. Yeah, Squeeze. I don't know if it's called Squeeze. It's called something.
In the
where,
caves.
Where they're stuck down there and she is having a panic attack and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, guess it's not that enclosed, but I would be a bit nervous about it. There was a lot of department of suspension of disbelief for me insofar as like, I think the biggest one for me was like, they kick up the guano and they go, oh, you want to watch out for that? It can make you hallucinate. All five of them are clearly having hallucination symptoms. Daryl finds gas masks, just looks at them, and then puts them away again. I'm like, why wouldn't you put one on? Like, that seems really dumb.
Try it out, at least.
I thought the visuals were cool. I liked the bioluminescence and the glowing walkers. Yeah. I thought that was really awesome.
Totally reminds me of a Shrooms trip I had once.
I was literally going to ask you, it was like, so hallucinogens, tell me about it. Is this like very similar?
Yeah. usually see people attacking you and people, your dead relatives. Just pretty much every rave I went to, that's what it was all about.
10 out of 10. And if you microdose, you just see tiny ghosts.
Tiny little mini grandmas.
Little mini ghostlets. Interesting that we got some insight into what is happening in the UK. The Scots say the army got things locked down quickly, so things were generally good when they left. So I'm assuming that they're not good anymore, given that this...
That was interesting, yeah.
Yeah,
makes
given
you curious.
That this... it felt like the show The Terror, which Adam Nagaitis was in. Great show. Very good for winter, actually. If anyone out there hasn't watched The Terror, ooh, maybe we could do a one-off on it for Christmas.
Maybe, yeah. I never watched it. I heard it was really scary. That's what
Oh, you should watch it, Jason. Tense. It's really good. Mm-hmm. But it gave me this idea of, like, because the whole thing with The Terror in real life, because it was a real expedition, it's sort of piecing together what happened from what you find that's left behind. Like, why did things go so wrong? Why did people turn against each other? Blah, blah, blah.
It's cannibalism,
And I liked that element of the tunnel and being like, what happened here? What went down? Why did they kill each other? I think we're meant to infer that it's because they were all slowly going crazy. But it hints to me that there might have been a breakdown in authority back in the UK. So I'm hoping that they emerge from the other end of the tunnel to see what's going on there.
Yeah.
They're headed that way. And I don't know if it's just because of British people and the apocalypse. It did make me think of 28 Days Later, because that's the British film I associate most with the zombie apocalypse, even though they're not technically zombies.
Whatever. 28 Days Later. It's a great zombie movie.
So two separate things sort of happen in the tunnel. Daryl goes on his sort of hallucinogenic journey and Carol goes on hers. Daryl's, I thought the stuff with Cadron was really dumb. I thought it did his character a disservice. It was really stupid, especially after they just established that Daryl didn't kill his brother with him, then to be like, you did kill my brother, the zombie, and run off.
I didn't understand. Because so they're sitting there talking, and Cadron starts telling Daryl about his brother. His name was Michelle. And then
it almost sounds like Merle. Yeah.
He said something. Yeah, he said, oh, you know, it's like having to finish him off, you can't imagine, or what. Daryl, of course, we're already thinking, yeah, Daryl's already been through that, but of course Daryl wouldn't say that. Oh, I already went through that. No, he just was like, yeah, I can imagine.
Oh,
but
my
anyway,
God, you too.
Oh, brothers. But then anyway, so when Daryl told him that I didn't kill him, it was that girl, and then he said some things that I couldn't understand, and we don't have closed captions, so I played it back a couple times. I couldn't quite hear what he was saying, which didn't help. But it seemed like that he felt like disillusioned, like, oh, everything I went through at Maison Mare, which is where he was like tortured, you know, and everything else, like it was because of this girl. And that was causing some kind of existential crisis. And I felt like he meant, well, then all the stuff where Laurent, you know, turned me religious meant nothing. Or was that what he was saying? Because if so, I don't understand why. It would still be the same thing. Your brother was killed and you felt, you know, like lost in life, and then this kid turned you around. Why does it matter whether Daryl killed him or somebody else? I was
confused.
I suppose
it's the idea that you've done everything thinking one thing and then you find out that's not true. I guess it would shake you a little bit. Like,
it would shake you,
like,
but would it make you feel like, oh, now that means nothing because someone else killed him when I thought it was this guy? Who cares who did it?
I don't think so. I think he was just working through it. Because I think when he's in the tunnel, he's fine until the psychoactive back one. God. You know, sometimes when you're saying sentences and you're like...
It just seemed like it shook him. It shook him like to the point where he was questioning everything that he went through.
Well, if he's reading everything as signs from God, he's massively misread one of them. Or
yeah,
something that he thought was a sign wasn't one.
He's like, I don't need to forgive you, so that means I can become a villain again. That's kind of what
I
it felt like.
Lost three fingers. I don't think it would have changed any of Cadron's decisions necessarily, but I think it would shake you a little bit to find out something you thought was true is just not.
I think I'm missing part of the story here, because I'm going to watch it again with closed captions and see if I can figure it out, because I feel like there's
good
a key
idea.
Piece missing. But then, so then he hallucinates his brother, one of the zombies, and then Daryl kills him, and then he's like, you killed my brother, and runs off.
And then he runs
Michelle.
It reminds me of when we rewatched last summer, we rewatched Armageddon, and Steve Buscemi's character just gets space dementia halfway through, and they just tie him to a chair, and they're like, well, he's crazy. I was like, so Cadron got tunnel dementia and just ran away, so that's fine. But then Daryl goes to get the masks and is intercepted by the Scots, who take the masks. You hear one the girls say to the guy, we can't just leave him here. And clearly they intend to kill Daryl. Then we see this bit that I'm conflicted about, which is we get a vision of Isabel coming back in her little Jawa costume, like when we first met her, talking to Daryl. And the first time I saw this, I thought it was lame as shit and I really hated it. I was like, oh my God, of course she disappears in a pile of fucking fireflies. Like, I didn't enjoy it. Tonight when I rewatched it, I was like, it's kind of nice. Like, it's nice that she came back. Yeah. And I liked that we saw his grandfather again, but it felt very much like a proper goodbye to France and goodbye to the first season and second season of the show. And I think that's bittersweet because it hasn't been everything we wanted it to be. And I think it's unfortunate that Isabel's loss was probably one of the biggest missteps of the show, or the biggest kind of, it wasn't done quite the way we wanted it. We were all disappointed that she died. So it was bittersweet to see her again and see her disappear off into the distance. But I thought both actors did a really good job in that scene. And yeah, it just kind of highlighted the loss that she was for the show and for Daryl.
And it's true.
I feel about it.
But I think it's better to have that moment than not, because we want Daryl to care. And
we do.
There was a theme, one of my points is about in this episode, they hit on a theme that's pretty common in The Walking Dead, but it's how they grieve the people that they lost, and that makes them question whether they can or should continue on. But then the people that are still there are a reason to continue on, you know?
Yeah.
And so the three people hallucinating in the channel were Codron, Daryl, and Carol. And Carol was hallucinating Sophia, Codron hallucinating his brother. We know for those two, those are the two people they both cared about the most. So then that says something maybe about Daryl hallucinating, you know, Merle didn't show up. Yeah. That would be funny. Merle shows up.
Oh, God.
Or something, you know. Just get out of this tunnel, you fool. The English are shite.
Yeah, I know. You're just like, oh, here's Merle. Or dog. Dog turns up.
Dog shows up. That would have been amazing. Starts looking at him. Oh.
Then, Daryl's like, oh, buddy.
But no, it was Isabel. And by the way, dog's still alive as far as we know.
In canon. Dog is still alive.
Yeah, in canon. But anyway, so that says something, you know, that he cared enough to hallucinate her.
Yeah. Bon courage, Monsieur Dixon. It was very beautiful.
And I want to say on the record that I think the Firefly motif is actually good. Like, he talked about Fireflies back home, and Fireflies are, I think, only in pretty,
you don't get them in the
they're
UK.
Pretty rare. Yeah, we don't get them in California rare, either. Yeah. They're in the Midwest. And so it's something magical that she was looking forward to. And so as she was dying, she said something about Fireflies. And it was a little corny, especially in an episode that I already hated. So it was easy to bash on it. But if the rest of the episode was good, I wouldn't mind that, because you're kind of not quite in your right mind and you're just thinking about what you wish were true. Mm-hmm. But and then to have her go off in a like little gathering of fireflies around her, that was kind of nice. Yeah,
it was really beautifully shot. Like I say, the first time I was like, ugh, and then the second time I was like, oh,
it's all right.
So I don't know. I don't know what that says about me.
When Carol was hugging Sophia, and I couldn't help but think, isn't that a zombie? Right?
I full on thought Carol was going to die at one point. I was
but I don't know. I guess it was just air. She was hugging air. And then when Sophia started to walk away, and she's like, can I come with you? And Sophia,
that was sad.
Turned back, and then it was sad. It was pretty moving.
I found that really sad. The idea of being allowed to go to the place that the person you've loved and lost is, like, that's heartbreaking. Like, that really is. And there was a point where I thought, fuck, Sophia's gonna take her with her, and I was like, oh no, she's not for you. Carol's on her parallel journey, and where she follows what she thinks is Sophia into the service tunnel. And I was a bit like, wouldn't you just use the service tunnel? It seems to be in better nick than the outside tunnel. So anyway, I wonder if they'll return to that in the next season. And we see not only Sophia, but we see Carol as a zombie. We see Carol battle herself.
Oh, we did? I didn't notice that.
Yeah, there's a zombie that's either it's Melissa McBride in zombie makeup or an extra who looks very like her. But that's who she's struggling with killing on the ground.
I like that. Oh, I thought that was just a child zombie. She didn't want to kill a child. That was like her.
Yeah, it was her. Okay. And then weirdly, she doesn't kill it, but doesn't get bit. So I don't know what happened there at all.
Right.
So that was fascinating. It reminded me a bit of Michonne's last episode, where she sees herself in different ways.
She is her own worst enemy sometimes, Carol.
Yeah. Yeah, she is. And she knows it.
Yeah.
And you kind of see that with what she says to Ash earlier in the episode. Carol gives up killing herself and has this moment with Sophia. And there was just a moment where I was worried about her. There was a moment where I was like, fuck, what if Carol, what if this is it? What if finding peace about Sophia is the end of her arc? But thankfully it's not.
Yeah. I sort of like, I want this to be going somewhere, because every time she has some kind of an episode around Sophia, it's like, okay, she's sad and upset about Sophia. We know. Where's the progression here? There was some moving moments with this one, so that kind of made it worthwhile. But I'm also like, can we get some progression or some kind of an arc with this story?
Behind now.
Really? Do you think that was a catharsis? Because to me, it just seemed like, I'm really sad that she's leaving without me and I can't follow her and I'm going to continue to be upset about this. That's what
Well, earlier
like
in
me.
The episode, she said she couldn't see her anymore. She couldn't see her face.
Her face.
She sees her face here.
Okay. Thank you.
Symbols. That's why they pay me.
You just keep doing the podcast and I'll listen.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting a lot out of this.
Okay. It was funny because it made me think about Rick and Carl and Rick saying that he lost Carl and wasn't able to see Carl's face.
Yeah, right. That's right.
It's something, without getting too emotional about it, it is difficult, I think, when you lose someone to remember them a certain way, and then there comes a point where you think things less so now because of our digital lives and how we film everything and have photos, but like remembering someone's voice or remembering what they looked like. And
thinking about my grandma,
it's always
right now.
Really bothered me that in the zombie apocalypse you lose that. Like, I remember being heartbroken for Carl when he got that picture of his mom and dad for Judith, and then presumably lost it when the prison was overrun because he wanted to show Judith what her mom looked like. And yeah, this idea of those memories slipping from your consciousness is really hard, and it must feel, particularly for a parent, devastating to lose that connection. So
we know the solution. Just sniff some batshit.
Sniff some guano, baby! You'll solve all your grief bombs. Yeah. And that was Carol's arc there, and then she finds Daryl, they put the masks on, and they
So you think
off.
That's over, huh? With
into
Sophia?
I don't think we'll never mention Sophia again, because that would be
but
weird.
They made a whole point this season of revisiting her grief about that, and you think this is kind of the capper on it?
I think that's the capper on that particular thing. Yeah. Next season, Henry.
She did mention Henry and Lizzie.
And Lizzie,
not Sam,
I did laugh. I did. I know, no Sam, justice for Sam. I did laugh when Daryl's like, that wasn't your fault. And I'm like, well, Lizzie kind of was her fault a little bit.
But no, I don't agree with that. Well, no, was I it? I mean, because she left them alone together? Is that why?
Lizzie. No, she shot Lizzie.
Yeah, but I don't know if I... You know what I mean? Like, she just found out that Lizzie killed...
I'm glad she did.
Was going to kill Judith next.
Absolutely did the right thing, but I did just laugh when Daryl said it, because I was like, I mean...
Well, when he said that, my first thought was... It probably is kind of her fault, but when I thought back on it, I'm like, no, maybe not. Maybe none of that was her fault. And then when I thought that, I'm like, that was such a nice thing of Daryl to say. And it reminded me of Good Will Hunting. Have you seen that? With
years ago.
Robin Williams, one of the more moving scenes in any movie. He's with young Matt Damon in a therapy session, and Matt Damon's been abused, as you know, by his father, and he's just saying, it's not your fault, you know. And he's like, well yeah, whatever. And he goes, it's not your fault. He just kept saying that over and again until Matt Damon broke down in tears.
Aww,
that always gets me.
I'm being glib. It obviously, she did the right thing in that situation, but it just made me laugh because they're three very different cases.
Yeah, they are. And no, I mean, I know Lou Temple, for one, does not think she did the right thing in that situation. No. So there's some room for debate there, but it was a tough situation.
Yeah, it was. You don't cover that in like babysitting training. You know what to do if one of the children tries to murder the other one. You're like,
actually does. Oh.
Don't let them have a snack. I don't know. Ground
time
them?
Out.
Time out.
Okay. Well,
so
just
that's my tunnel point.
Yeah, I'm gonna go through some of my tunnel notes, and then I'll do a fresh point. So,
have you ever done the tunnel?
Yeah,
you have, right?
We drove
you did the
through
train
it,
or drove, yeah,
or probably a train. Yeah, train, and it's so for people who don't know, I think it's pretty clear, but. It's called the Channel Tunnel, or the nickname is the Channel. It goes underneath the English Channel, which is the body of water between France and England. I read it's 23.5 miles or 37.9 kilometers long. Mm-hmm. And what's the Scottish woman's name? Shauna?
Shona.
Shona. Shona says it's a 9-hour walk, I think she said, for them. Yeah. I just thought it was a great setting to go through a long, dark tunnel in the zombie apocalypse. You don't know what the hell is down there. And yeah. It's underwater. And I love there was water leaking from the top. Mm-hmm. Like, this thing could collapse at any moment. And then adding the psychoactive bat shit, which ChatGPT says guano itself isn't psychoactive and doesn't cause hallucinations. However, it can contain high levels of ammonia and pathogens, which, if inhaled in enclosed spaces, can cause respiratory issues, dizziness, and disorientation. In extreme cases, this might create sensations that could be confused with hallucinations. So it was trying to, go there, rationalize it as best as it could. And that this kind of the whole checkpoint with the dead military soldiers kind of reminded me of The Last of Us. You mm-hmm. see a lot of that kind of thing there. And I liked when they mentioned the bioluminescent Zeds, bioluminescence. Somebody said bioluminescence and Daryl said like fireflies, which got him thinking about Isabel. I thought that was kind of nice. And when he reached for the gas mask and Angus hit him and took the mask for he and Shona, mm-hmm. I think our reaction as Walking Dead fans is those guys are fucking evil. But we'd followed them this whole time, I mean, Daryl killed them, right?
I was quite shocked with how killed they were. Like, the first time I watched it, they came off as really sinister. Like, it came off as like, oh, they're being really cutthroat. The second time, I'm like, he's seeing all this through the haze of disorientation and hallucinating. Wouldn't you be looking out for yourself? Doesn't he effectively just do the same thing back?
So, he does. Yeah. I mean, because they made a point to say there's only enough gas masks for the two of us. So, I think maybe there could have been a way to do that where they could have all helped each other. But at the same time, I think we've seen our main characters do shit like this a lot.
Oh yeah.
You know. Yeah. So anyway. Yeah, and then Carol and Daryl continue onward through the channel towards England with You Can't Always Get What You Want playing in the background, which seems like it must have been expensive to get that song.
I think so.
I feel like music's expensive.
I had a kind of Last of Us-esque, well, maybe not that, just general zombie apocalypse-esque hesitation about the tunnel, which is... I don't know. I sort of thought in another version of the story... Wouldn't it have been commandeered by some kind of crooked group or a military or something? It seemed weird to me that you could just walk into it. I guess the system of checkpoints within it makes sense. But I was sort of like, wouldn't you expect like someone power hungry, like a Negan type figure, to have taken command of it? Because it's a huge resource at that point, being able to get back and forth. So it surprised me that it was so quiet around it. But it worked.
Well, maybe the breakdown in the military happened recently.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Something like that. I don't know. It's a good... I guess it's an interesting interpretation to have it not be that as opposed to what it always is.
That's true. I mean, they don't have time for that. Gotta get through.
No, they're like, we can't establish another... No, it's fine. Just get them in the tunnel. Get them through. And cube guano.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
So I want to do a point on tribalism, biases, and racism.
Did you know that Falou helped his racist neighbor?
He's so hot.
Because he did.
Yeah, so he's telling his racist neighbor told him you should go back with your people, and then the zombie apocalypse happened. And Falou stayed in his flat hoping it would pass. And then he got a knock at the door with his neighbor holding his unconscious 2-year-old. And Falou got her breathing again. And he said he saw gratitude in her father's eyes, which, I guess you could tell that. So then Angus says, so the apocalypse put an end to racism? And everyone kind of chuckles. And Falou says, maybe it leveled the field a tiny bit. Only two kinds of people now. The dead and the living, Which reminded me, and I think I would assume this is on purpose, in the second episode of The Walking Dead when Merle's spouting out a bunch of racist crap and Rick handcuffs him to a pipe and he says, "Look here, Merle, things are different now. There are no," and he actually says the N-word, "anymore. No dumb as shit, inbred white trash fools either. Only dark meat and white meat. There's us and the dead. We survive this by pulling together, not apart." And so it's just nice. An echo of that, I feel like.
I thought about that line as well. I was like, oh, yeah.
So, but then it was interesting in the same episode where Foley was sort of saying maybe it leveled things out a bit as far as biases and racism goes, that in the other parts of the episode, we see those biases more than usual. And Foley says that, you know, this couple that he met, the Demimonder, here to help Daryl and Carol get to England. And from there, they may be able to find a way across to America. I'm like, why not just find a place? Why do you have to go to England? But oh well, whatever. Yeah. I guess we'll figure out. So then we get these Scots, Shona and Angus, and Carol asks Falou, "They speak English?" And Falou says, "They're from Scotland, so," and Codron says, "No." Which is a dig. Rar, 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 rar. That's a stereotype, right? That it's hard to understand, I guess. So I get the sense, and maybe I already kind of knew this, but I hadn't really thought about it, that there's sort of a rivalry vibe between the English and the Scottish, right?
Just a little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Mostly friendly, or is it like serious?
No. I could talk about this for quite a long time. No, it's interesting. It all... How long have you got, really? I think it all comes down to the idea that Scotland views itself as having been colonized by the English at various points. And some nasty shit did go down with like the Highland clearances, where loads of Highlanders in Scotland were cleared off their land and starved out. But the Scots aren't angels in any of that. But it's a running joke that when... In fact, did we not watch the football when you were over and Peter and I were like, oh, we'll watch because England are getting played. the running joke is the Scots will support whoever is playing England. It's a long and complicated history, and it all ties into like whether people want to be part of the Union or not as well. That's a huge thing. Like a lot of the sectarian violence that happens in Ireland and in certain parts of Scotland is to do with people who feel loyalty to the Crown, who are generally Protestant, and people who feel that they don't want to be a part of that particular union and that they want their individual freedom, who tend to fall down on the Catholic side of things. So that's a very oversimplified version of a lot
just
of history.
To get kind of an idea,
Derek's really good on this. Derek's, because he's from Ireland, he's got a lot of nuance about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the stuff he was saying, that Angus was saying, is not... It's not shocking. Like, I've heard people say stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it is a bit like... Yeah.
But, and it was also between the French. Like, Falou says to Alika, they say it's better in England. And she goes, I went to London when I was little. The food was terrible. And that's a very stereotypical thing for the French to think about the English. And when I went to France, the food was incredible. Although I don't like creamy French food, but I like the way, this is just my opinion, but we went to like a Vietnamese restaurant in France. And the food was just prepared so like for presentation as well as taste. Just so beautifully. And then I go to England and it's like, mushy peas and meat pie and you know, fish and chips, which I love all of that too, but it's just a little more like meat and potatoes kind of.
Oh my god. And then you get up to Scotland and it's like even worse.
Haggis. I loved haggis.
Haggis. That's why I laugh when people are like, you should eat seasonally and locally. I'm like, sure, if we did that in Scotland it would literally just be like oats and potatoes most of the year. Right. Apart from a bit where we get really good berries, so we probably wouldn't get rickets. I always find it interesting watching Scottish people on TV, because I always feel a bit like, well, Scottish characters, I always get a bit cringy. I'm like, oh god, is that what we're like?
Can we do a quick whiskey tangent?
Now, yes.
We're talking about food. So one of the things I really wanted to do in Scotland was go to the distillery of my favorite whiskey place, Talisker. I discovered them because they had these Game of Thrones whiskeys, and my favorite one was the one from Talisker, which was paired with the Greyjoy family because it's by the sea.
Of the sea.
Yeah. And so we did get to go there, and it was a delight. And now, since then, I've just been going down this whiskey rabbit hole, buying up all kinds of scotches. I like scotch better than bourbon, but I've been learning about it. And scotch has to be barley, malted barley. And bourbons are made mostly with corn. They have to be at least 51% corn. But just in recent years, I found out recently, in the last like 15 years, but more in the last like 5 years, American single malts have become a thing. So they're making malts here. And there are now like twice as many malt distilleries in America than there are in Scotland, because America's so huge.
It's huge, right? Yeah.
So I ordered one. I'm going to try it. And it's from Seattle, this place called Westland, where the weather is like Scotland.
I was literally going to say Pacific Northwest. Yeah. You're on really similar territory.
So barley grows better there.
Yeah, because when we went to Victoria and BC for the first time, like years ago, it was like 2017. I remember we got off the seaplane and I was like, oh my God, this weather is so British. Right. And Victoria is like a mini Britain. And yeah, I remember being like, oh, it's maybe 5 degrees warmer consistently year round than it would be here. But it makes sense to me that Seattle would be the kind of place where you could do a good distillery in terms of like water supply and barley and whatnot.
I can't wait to try it. And there's a very strict rules about how you can make a scotch. You have to be in a certain kind of still. And so they're trying to establish rules about American single malts, but they're trying to leave room for more innovation where you can use different types of barleys and things, but also not make it so wide that it doesn't count as a category. Anyway, I probably went way too far down that rabbit hole. Sorry, people who don't care, but I'm just really into it right now.
If anyone's interested, Japan do really good single malts.
And they have their own style, of course.
It was like businessmen came over in like the noughties and late 90s and really like analyzed every single element of what made Scotch good.
It's good.
Nika, yes. And then they went back and implemented it and it's pretty decent. Mm-hmm. Like it's really, really good.
There are like a lot of citrusy ones from there, I understand.
Yeah. I like quite a light one. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different types, but we could have totally done that as a tangent time, but oh well. Anyway, back to this whole thing. So then also when they get to this checkpoint and somebody asks, why is it so close to France? And Angus says, to keep out the fucking French. And Codronen goes, hey, relax, man. So there's all these like tensions coming out about but then I loved also when they first come up to the checkpoint and they think some people might be there, the British army, and Shona's like, we're British, God save the Queen. So she's playing up there. So there's all these like tribal differences, but Scots and English are all British, so they're trying to play up their similarities there. That was interesting.
So rarely get a Scottish person who says they're British. Like I don't, if there's an option on a forum to say white Scottish rather than white British, I'll put white Scottish. And I don't know why, because I'm not consciously sitting there thinking like, fuck the Empire. I mean, I am a little bit, but not all the time.
Yeah, you want to keep your identity, right? Your Scottish identity.
Yeah, you're sort of looking for it and saying, yeah, I am Scottish. I don't see myself as being British.
But you live in England, so you're not like totally anti.
I know, it's weird. Like, it's funny, we used to joke when we first got back here that it felt stranger living in England than it did living in Canada, because everything was just a little bit different from home, whereas in Canada, everything was quite different, so it felt like you were in a new place and things like that, whereas here I'm like, oh, things are just a little bit weird all of the time.
Right. That's interesting. So I don't really have a whole lot to say about that. I just thought it really stood out that people were being kind of rude about people from other places, but I found it interesting. I'm kind of glad they had it in there for some reason, because it feels like how people really are, I guess.
And I think in Scotland, there's definitely a propensity towards kind of sarcasm and insult humor, which I think always translates very well.
I haven't noticed that with you at all, but other Scots
sometimes you have
to
be like, oh, I should rein this in a bit. Like, I remember when I first moved to Canada, I was like, oh, we swear a lot. We're like really, I feel sometimes like we're really dry and cynical about how we see the world. And then
you're funny as hell. Like, and I found that Scots tend to be funny. You can't generalize too much, but there's this one podcast I listen to that's a comic book podcast called House to Astonish, and they're fucking hilarious, and they're two Scottish guys.
We like being aggressively friendly, but with emphasis on the aggressive sometimes. I kind of went through this quite...
Yeah, I guess do you want to zero in on anything else?
Yeah. Well, I asked ChatGPT, I did a Jason, and I asked ChatGPT, is French healthcare good? Because they made a joke about French healthcare in this episode.
Right. Yeah. I couldn't tell if that was a slight, it was sarcastic or not.
Well, ChatGPT says French healthcare is often regarded as one of the best in the world.
Mm.
It offers universal coverage, meaning all residents have access to medical services, and it is funded through a combination of taxes and social security contributions. The system is known for its high quality of care, extensive range of services, and relatively low out-of-pocket costs for patients. France consistently ranks high in global assessments, particularly in areas like life expectancy and patient satisfaction. However, like any system, it has its challenges, such as waiting times for certain services and regional disparities in access to care. So, like, yeah, apparently it's quite good. One of the things that bothered me about this episode was I felt like we're jumping sometimes in a way that's unsatisfactory. So yeah. We open this episode, they're at the airfield, and then suddenly we're on the road with Falou and Cadron and these two women, one of whom we might have met previously, the other of whom, who also disappears in this episode. I don't know where she ends up.
Mm-hmm. But Alika? Are you talking about the one he ends up with?
No. There's another one. There's a girl.
Yeah, but the one he ends up with, I'm like, oh, yeah, her. Wait a minute. We've never seen her before. Who is this?
No, we've never seen her
before. And
who
is she with? And how did she just pop? And it doesn't seem like Falou knows her. He's just meeting her. So where'd she come from? I'm confused.
So the girl she's with, I think, was at the Nest, but has no lines in this episode and then disappears. I liked that Alika was nice to horses. I was like, well, you're better than Sherry.
Who isn't?
What's that? You want your horse to be hydrated and not die. She's a keeper, Falou. But yeah, they stop at this creepy hospital, which I'm just like, surely this would be picked dry. I don't know. I mean, I guess you would try. You would go in and see what was there.
Get a necklace, cool necklace.
Yeah, he got a cool necklace. I enjoyed the optics of these people who'd clearly been tethered before they died so that they wouldn't be able to roam around. But then, of course, the evil lieutenant is there looking for the plane and the cause is not dead.
They just show up everywhere.
Jacinta survived. Dan Cadron's like, oh, shit. And then we have another save shoot where someone comes in and shoots and everyone's like, oh! And they save Cadron and Falou.
Right. Got to have at least one or two of those per episode.
Yeah. And so Cadron does know where they are. He knows where the hangar is. And so they head there to save them. I guess I was just a bit like, I really thought this storyline was dead. Like, over dinner, Peter was like, so they really, like, did pass the parcel with who the villain was this season, right?
Yeah.
They, like, reassigned it, like, four
relay.
Times. And I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think it went from highest paid actor to lowest paid actor.
It was Janae, and then it was Lo Sang, and then it was, I heard her call Jacinta this episode, but I swear Lo Sang called her Jacinta, so I don't know. But anyway.
I thought it was Jacinta or Jacinta. Yeah.
And then, I mean, you would think that other one that's always second in command would get a promotion at some point, but Daryl and Carol are like, oh, we don't care about you, we're going to England.
Yeah, the gap that confused me the most is like, so the plane leaves, Jacinta shoots herself,
yeah,
nothing happens, everyone just walks off and it's like, oh.
Right, because it's calm after that, huh?
Yeah, well, we don't know, we literally, it's calm, they're all looking up, Jacinta kills herself, and then next thing we know, they're heading into Paris to go and meet the Scottish people.
We've got to get past these. Got to get quick. We don't have time for that.
Yeah, I was just like, okay, cool. So yeah, all of this to say, this leads to the kind of airfield scene, and parallel to it, we've also got Anna. I was kind of bummed to see Anna again, not because I don't like her character, but because I thought we did a good farewell last
week. I know. And if you see her again, that means she might die, which she did.
Which she did, because obviously she was going to, because she gave us backstory in the first 2 seconds of being on screen. She's like, I once lived on the street when I was a singer. Where is my mother? I come from this. I was like, you're dead. Like, no one survives that.
And it also felt rushed. Like, let me give you my character card here so that you can develop some sympathy for me really quick.
And then you see her, to be fair play to her, she does her best by Laurent and guides them through the garage where we know that zombies are.
Yeah. But now I think that I was questioning whether she intended to betray Laurent, because, I mean, they wanted us to think that because we've seen her betray him before. And then it seemed like on my first watch, oh no, the whole time that she was planning on, you know, guiding these people into a dangerous spot. But I don't think so on second watch, because, well, why not just lead them somewhere completely different? She led them close to where the plane was. And then they made a point of having her see the Eiffel Tower, which made her, the picture of the Eiffel Tower, which made her think of Laurent. So I think maybe that's when she decided no, I can't betray them. I'm going to lead these guys through this dangerous garage, which, how does she know the garage is dangerous? But whatever.
Yeah, I know. That was my reading, right? Where she sees the Eiffel Tower and then is
that's
like...
That's when she decided to
I'm
be
going
good.
To save him.
Yeah.
So like, sure. And then, of course, she gets ripped apart by Zeds.
And doesn't seem to notice, by the way. She's just like, got She's this blank like, look on her face. Eh. She's so blasé like, about everything.
Okay. And she did die in quite a cool way in the sense of literally she was very chill about it. She was like...
Okay. Yeah, whatever. Comme si, comme ça.
Comme si, comme ça. So yeah, it was all a bit weird, and I felt like the stakes were never really that high. For me, I was like, Carol's obviously going to get off the plane, so all those shots where you saw just Ash going like, yeah, fuck you, motherfuckers, and things like that, I was like, Carol's clearly not in
they
there anymore. She
her.
Got out to go and save Daryl.
Right. And I was trying to figure out when she got out, and she looks over at him when the plane is still parked and says, are we good? And he goes, yeah. So I guess she meant you don't need my help with the plane anymore, and I'm going to get off right now and try to help you. Because then we see the plane taxiing, and you see Ash a couple of times just cussing up a storm, and they don't show the seat next to him, whether it's empty or not.
Laurent's like, I did not know there were so many nasty words in the English language. And he's like, yeah, bitch! And he's like, oh. I don't like this. yeah, so I don't know. How did you feel about the plane and the escape from the race course?
It just seemed like, all of it was so rushed that I felt it was a bit going through the motions. Like, here's an action movie scene. I mean, it was okay. It was fine. But I wasn't caught up in it like I'd love to be. I felt kind of outside it because it just felt so rushed. And even like Anna, you know, doing the right thing, I wish I would have been more moved by that. I don't know. I mean, the whole episode, for the most part, I just kind of felt like, I should be feeling more here. This is a cool setup, or whatever's happening is moving, but I'm not feeling it for the most part as much as I wish I would. So it was okay. I'm not like as down on this episode as I was about the two middle ones, but it was fine.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at with it as well. I'm just sort of like, all right. Like, guess that's the end of those two chapters of this particular story.
Yeah, and it really does wrap. I mean, au revoir à la France. Like, that's it for France, I think, on this show. And this was meant to be the capper of the everything we've seen so far. And in that sense, a little bit of a disappointment, you know.
Yeah, I felt very nostalgic when they arrived at the meeting point, where it really looked like the place where Cadron's brother died. I don't know if it was the same place. Mm. And like the violin music was playing, they're like, na na na, na na na. And I was like, oh, remember when the show was like so fresh in that first season? And yeah, I'm hoping that they managed to revive it a bit in season three, because at the moment it feels a bit like they cleared the decks really quickly and it's left us reeling a little bit, and there was a lot of frustration there. So I'm hoping that whatever comes next is better.
I think where this, you know, I'm not convinced that Carol coming back is what made the show worse as much, maybe some, but I think the bigger problem is they just didn't do a great job of cramming everything they wanted to do into six episodes.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where most of the problems come from. And it's kind of like the last part of Game of Thrones. They just...
Definitely
rushed things to the point where a lot of things didn't work, or just weren't as didn't feel as natural. They felt contrived a lot of the times.
Yeah,
and so I don't know if they should have just maybe tried to tell half the amount of story, or just begged for three more episodes, or what. I don't know what the solution would be.
Or just kept, you know, finished this season with like the battle at the nest or something. I don't know.
Yeah
it's weird. It's weird. But that's kind of it for my main points, I think.
Okay, let's get into notes.
I liked Carol's one-liner about being allowed carry-on and it being a crossbow.
Oh, I know, me too.
Ash allowed one piece of carry-on. I was
yeah,
like, oh,
and it was a
funny.
Sweet moment that she brought him back his, you know, iconic weapon.
It's great. Oh, and I liked, I quite liked that. Well, it was dumb, but the way that Carol and Daryl were both like, no, I'm staying. No, I'm staying. I was like, of course they haven't had a discussion about this. Of course. They're just like assuming one thing or another.
Well, no, I think Daryl already told her that he was staying. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I forget.
Laurent was sweet with Carol. I feel like she doesn't quite know herself around him a little bit, because he's quite an unnerving kid in how perceptive he is about certain things.
Yeah.
When he's talking to her about Ash and he says, "I don't think he likes me." And kind of what he said about people shouldn't lie, but I'm glad you did. I think she kind of needed to hear that a little bit.
Yes.
Some good had come of it.
But then when she said, "You have a really special way of seeing things, don't you?" I didn't quite buy that. I felt it didn't land, and I wanted him to say, "Don't patronize me, lady."
Do you want a cookie? I can give you cookies. Like, no. Daryl comes in like, "Why don't you just come over here, buddy?" Like, yeah. I thought it was interesting what Ash said about there's no word for widow when it's a kid mm-hmm. loss. I thought that was quite powerful. And Daryl saying he worries about plenty. I would say Daryl does have kids, because he does.
Yeah.
He's got Judith, he's got RJ, he's got yes. Ron.
Like, and yeah. I mean, I had a whole point on it, but I didn't really go through it because we kind of covered it in different points. But there really was this theme about those grieving, those you've lost, but that you find purpose in those who are still here. Ash found purpose in Laurent, you know, and mm-hmm. When Daryl told Carol, you know, she started crying because she, as you mentioned, couldn't picture Sophia's face anymore. And he said something like, "We keep going, you know, that's what we do." Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really sweet. But on a meta level, I'm like, that's what you guys do. You've been going for 12 years, 14 years now.
I did think for the Carol shippers of Carol and Daryl, I did think that was the closest I've come to thinking they might kiss was in that hug. I was and then like, no, they didn't. And I'm glad they did. I personally am glad they didn't.
Me too, yeah.
But I feel like for the shippers, that was a nice moment too. I loved Ash's aviator shades and flight jacket. I don't know if he had that on the way out or if I've just forgotten it, but I thought he looked very cool. And yeah, like you, I thought "suck it, motherfucker" was a really funny thing to shout with a child in the back of the plane.
When Ash puts his shades on in the morning and looks in the mirror, he goes, "Fuck yeah."
Yeah, the Top Gun theme plays and he's like, "Yeah." I loved Falou's girlfriend being like, "Let's say goodbye again." That was cute. I was like, "Oh, they're in love. That's nice." Mm. It was very rushed, but I am glad Falou didn't die. I'll take a rushed, contrived romance over Falou dying pointlessly.
Me too. Same.
And that is me. I think I enjoyed Shona telling Angus to shut up because he'd just pissed them off. In the tunnel, which I thought was probably pretty accurate, to be honest. And yeah, we finish with Carol and Daryl saying, "Let's go home." And then "You can't always get what you want." And obviously we know that they're heading elsewhere. So we will see what comes next.
They don't want another season of the show.
No.
They just want to go home.
Please, home.
Okay, my notes. So Laurent said in France that the dandelion is called pissenlit, which translates to pee in bed, and and that's true. I looked it up. ChatGPT says this name comes from the plant's diuretic properties. Eating dandelion greens can make you need to urinate more frequently. Dandelion leaves were traditionally used as a natural remedy to promote kidney health.
In the UK, it's also wishes. I think you wish if you blow in a dandelion. It's been a long time since I did that, but I think that is what it is.
Okay, cool. Ash is looking for a hose long enough to run through an external tank so they don't have to stop. And when I was looking about how a small plane could cross the Atlantic, I read that they do, like, you can have extra tanks and you have to switch the fuel source mid-flight. So he will do anything anyway not to have to stop in Greenland now because he hates Greenland.
So Laurent, the traumatized little French boy who's never been on a plane, is going to be like hanging off the wing like, "I'm just going to put the hose in the other
come on source. Kid fucking get it in there."
He's like, "The reason I took Laurent is he's got very small hands, so it makes it easier to do this manual labor." Excellent, right. Ash, you're my favorite weirdo.
Yeah, that's about all the notes I had. I was curious to ask if there's anything in particular that you're hoping for next season.
I want to see London now. They've teased it. And I'm like, well, they're going in the fucking tunnel. I'll be really pissed off if the first episode is them in, like, the Alhambra. And I'm like...
Well, they go through the tunnel and they come out in Spain. It's weird. Something like, about the apocalypse.
Someone rebuilt it. That's so odd. I had a curiosity. Do you know Daryl's dog tags Is there a backstory to those? Listeners, help me out.
I feel like there's something with that. Yeah.
Are they his grandfathers?
Like, I feel like that's what, because, yes, because when Isabel said to him, you know, ghost Isabel, you won't die here like he did. And he looks and there's some dude. And I'm like, who's the dude? Well, that's his grandpa, right? From World War II. He's hallucinating his grandpa. And I think the dog tags, he got those through his family or something. I forget.
Or something? Like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. She's like, who's this dude? No one. Isabel's like my ex-boyfriend. Anyway, moving on.
He's dead.
He's dead. You don't care. Anyway.
I'm hoping that they do a better job with the pacing, because I think if they can do that they really do a lot of other things really well.
Yeah. Peter says we have to do a bingo card of what we need to see in Spain to make it Spanish, because he was like, well, in France you saw the Eiffel Tower, the Arc de Triomphe, the catacombs. And I was like, right, we'll have to do our Spanish hit list. And Peter's like, if no one gets in a bullfight, I'm just going to be really annoyed. Like, I doubt that that's going to happen, but you never.
I don't know the Spanish landmarks well, but I just, you know, you have to see Gaudi architecture. That's the main
I was thinking
thing.
Sagrada Familia in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. That was my guess, but we'll see.
Well, only on The Walking Dead would smelling batshit lead to poignant cathartic moments.
Do you think that's why we say that's batshit when we say something's a bit mad?
Maybe
I
so.
I just figured that
out. Yeah, batshit crazy. They all went batshit crazy. In fact, that was the original title for this episode.
Book of batshit
crazy.
Only it was French, so it sounded dead classy. Only Mad. On The Walking Dead would you send your treasured, prodigal child away in a plane with a man you met 2 weeks ago in the backseat.
And that would be like the best ending.
And that would be the happiest ending that the show could hope for.
Send the kid away from Carol in a plane. Happy
in a
ending.
Plane. A very dodgy plane where he might have to change the fuel tank. But anyway, it's fine.
It's all good. All right. That is our show, episode 610. Thanks for listening, everybody, to our season of podcasting about the Daryl Show. Well, we still have a feedback left to go, but it's been fun, even though there were some bumpiness in there. It's always fun.
Oh, yeah.
So next up will be listener feedback for this episode, Au Revoir les Enfants. We will be recording that on Wednesday this time. Mm-hmm. So hopefully everybody can get your feedback in by then, because I don't think we'll be doing more feedback until next season after that.
Yeah. If you want to write in or leave us a message about it, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, please check out some of our other shows. Run for Your Lives, they just put out an episode on the classic Halloween, 1978 Halloween. So if you're not sick of Halloween by now, that movie, it scared the shit out of me as a kid. I think I snuck in the living room and watched parts of it while my mom and dad were watching it.
No, amazing. That's how I watch Nightmare on Elm Street.
This episode's made possible by Patreon supporters like Shauna Sullivan, who pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. So thank you to Shauna. One of the things I do occasionally is I'll do listener chit chats where I just interview one of the patrons about their live and whatever I think is most interesting about them. And I just had a great one with Dodie. She was minister, you know, a pastor. Mm-hmm. And so it was fun to ask her about that and what led her to that. And also she worked in a movie theater when she was younger, and recently after retirement she decided to go back and start working at one again. So I wanted to ask her about that, because I used to work in a movie theater too, so we kind of had a lot to talk about.
So cool.
All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit, Bethany Watrous.
Spoilers.
Oh yeah, I forgot. So we're doing our spoiler segments. There will be spoilers in this segment, in case that wasn't clear.
That's
so,
the spoiler.
If you don't, that's it. Bye. No, bye. If you don't want any spoilers, you should just stop listening. Bye. So I mean, you sent me an article, but actually listeners have been writing to us about this through most of the season.
And we thought it was bullshit.
Think we're idiots, but I actually looked, somebody sent me pictures a few weeks back of them dressing up Spain like England.
Interesting.
So they put up like foam boxes and things. So I guess, where did you see when you were in your bathrobe and you were hanging out with Norman Reedus? Where were you?
Alicante. It's in Valencia, and there's a big set of filming studios near there, which is why they were in Alicante.
And is there, like, I guess the architecture in parts of Spain is close enough to England that it could pass as English?
Yes. I mean, I guess.
They're not going to show Gaudi buildings in that. Yeah. Like, I mean, standing. The pictures I saw of it did look like that, like it could be English, you know, as far as I know. Yeah. I've been to Barcelona, and I know some buildings didn't seem particularly Spanish. Mm-hmm. But that blows my theory away about, you know, them wanting to film in Europe so they could actually appreciate the authentic locations. If they're going to be filming in Spain because it's cheaper, but saying it's England, then that blows that away.
I think it costs a shit ton to film in the UK. Yeah. Like, I think because, like, Marvel have a monopoly on they've filmed in a lot of the kind of big studios down near London. In fact, have you been watching The Franchise?
No. Is that HBO?
Yeah.
I gotta watch that.
It's set in one of those kind of big complexes there. It would be amazing to see London, apocalyptic London, but I'm a bit sad if it's not really going to be London.
Yeah.
It's kind of the way I feel, like, often they use Glasgow for, like, Philadelphia or Vancouver. It's, like, every city ever on Netflix, so I'm a bit, like, takes you out of it a little bit.
Yeah, in Last of Us, they used, I forget, Edmonton for Boston, yeah. And I was kind of bummed about that.
Yeah, because Edmonton, like... It's quite distinct. Like, it's quite distinctive in that it's like a prairie city over. Yeah, I was like, oh, there's Edmonton. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we don't know for sure, but it seems like we've been talking about they'll be in Spain next season, but it seems like they might not be in Spain. And at one point, Norman Reedus was talking about a season 4 also filming in Spain. So maybe they will actually go to Spain in season 4. Who knows?
Why would they go? I'm kind of a bit like, but why would you go up to London?
Yeah, that's anyway, true.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who's to say?
It'll
who
probably
knows?
Just be in England, but we don't know.
Hello,
sure.
You're in England. Like, that's a really bad English accent. I'm so sorry, everyone. One of my stepsisters had a boyfriend once who was from London, and literally he had spent his whole life with us just going, you sound like you're from London, which is just not. They broke up. I don't think that was the main reason, but yeah, I apologize for that terrible accent. Yeah, I guess we'll see. I'm open-minded, but it makes more sense to see that than for them to be directly in Spain.
Yeah.
But I will equally be disappointed if we don't get real England and real Spain, if that makes sense.
And I mean, one I love England. I love England. I would like to go spend a year there or more.
Yeah.
But one positive, just other than the fact that England's great, if it is set in England next season, is we won't have to roll our eyes every time everyone knows English.
Yeah.
You know.
Although, all joking aside, London has got a crazy amount of languages in it. Like,
oh, yeah.
The amount of people in London who speak, like, different languages.
Cosmopolitan.
And, yeah. I love being on the bus in London because you just hear, like, everyone. It's great. Like,
yeah, I love
my
that
favorite
too.
Is when it's German people because they think I can't understand them, but I can. But yeah, we'll see. I'm intrigued.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.